Okay.
I will recall us out of recess to order, and we will proceed with the agenda. And item number three is, or number four is our overview from CIC. And before I start that, though, I will say that there's an important issue with the staff going on right now, and Rick has taken a few minutes to make a couple of important phone calls. So I will welcome Andrew Spreadborough, who is the director of COIC, and he's going to give us an overview today on CET.
Yeah, among other things. And I know you have potentially a lengthy agenda. I'm not sure how we're doing on time, so just give me the wave if I need to start winding down. Okay.
You're good.
But I appreciate the time on the agenda, and my goal here, I guess a few goals. One is to provide a general overview of COIC, just very briefly what we do. I know certainly Councillor Scott, new to the council, may not be familiar, but it's been a while since we've been out, just to give the general update on what we do, so I want to do that. I want to hit on a few of our items on our 2016 agenda, things that we'll be working on over the next year, just so you're familiar. I want to introduce and discuss with you a legislative concept that we'll be hoping to have introduced in the 2017 session, and I'll likely be coming back to council down the road and asking for some formal endorsement, so I want to kind of introduce that today. And then just generally have a conversation and see if you have questions about COIC, what we do, are there things that are particularly of interest, things you want to drill down deeper on, or things that we're not doing maybe that you'd like us to see involved in. So I envision this as a discussion as well and an opportunity for me to address any questions you might have. But we'll see if this works. It does. So I wanted to start by, I'm sure that's hard to read, and I'll read it to you, but I wanted to start by noting that we completed, our board and staff completed a strategic plan over the summer in June, had it approved, and part of that process was to rewrite our mission statement. And so I'll read it to you. It says, the Central Oregon Intergovernmental Council serves the local governments of Central Oregon, providing regional collaboration, efficiencies, and service delivery for a stronger local economy and quality of life. And there are a couple really key concepts embedded in that. First off, the really identifying local governments as our primary customers, our primary purpose for existence. And that goes back to how we were formed in the early 70s. The cities and counties formed us. Obviously, La Pine wasn't a city at that time, but the other seven cities and three counties formed Central Oregon Intergovernmental Council. We're a public organization. Our board is composed of city and county elected officials. Mayor Mullinex is our board member. And nice to see Don here because he was a longtime board member. Kathy is our alternate at the moment. So, our previous mission statement, which I won't recite because I don't remember it, but it was a little more general about, you know, providing services in the region, and, you know, economic development, business support, all those sorts of things. And we really deliberately called out the cities and counties. And it was a bit of a trade-off because when we do a lot of work in support of federal agencies, state agencies, other partners, and the concern is if we too narrowly focus that we're maybe losing some opportunities or not valuing other things we do. But we felt it was really important to be strategic and really call that out. You know, the cities and counties ultimately, again, composed our board and informed us. And if you're not happy and supportive of what we're doing, and if you're not viewing this as a strong partnership, then, you know, we're not going to be effective in anything we do. So that was a real key piece. The other real deliberate piece of the vision statement was identifying what we provide. That's regional collaboration, efficiencies, and service delivery. Again, those three terms are very deliberate. We really see the role of COIC is promoting regional collaboration, problem solving, planning, those sorts of things, conversations that occur on the regional level, where cities and counties maybe need to work together on things. And we'll give a couple examples of that when I go through. Secondly, on the efficiencies, we also see a real central role for COIC to help ensure that we're looking for opportunities to support cities and counties by identifying where they could work together better to achieve efficiencies, lower costs, less duplication, all those sorts of things. It's a very key function. And again, I'll have a couple of examples of that. And then third, the service delivery. And this has really been the core of CUIC's work over the last few years. We kind of deliver services. We're a workforce development provider, a transit provider, and other things. So, you know, we continue, we'll likely continue indefinitely, just being a provider of services at the regional scale. That's a value. So again, the wording is very, it's not the most exciting mission statement. It doesn't have a lot of the new buzzwords, but we really think it, in a very short statement, captures what we are about, or certainly where we're moving. A little bit of history. We were formed again in the early 70s by the city of the 80s. We're formed as a council of governments, a public organization. And there were a lot of these sorts of organizations springing up at that time because a lot of federal funding came down to regions, and the regions made decisions about how it was allocated. It's a little different now, where the feds don't really defer that much decision-making to the regions, but at the time they did. And so that was our initial charge. And we grew into different roles over the years and have adapted. We now have about 120, 130 employees. A lot of those are on the transit side. That's our biggest program area. We also have 11 locations between transit and our workforce development locations in Central Oregon, and including a couple offices. We provide workforce development in Klamath and Lake Counties too. So that's a couple of those locations. As mentioned, the board is composed of city and county elected officials, one each from each of the 8 cities, 3 counties. We have a tribal representative, and then we have some appointed members representing business and kind of large organizations, Central Oregon Community College, St. Charles. At a glance, our 4 primary program areas: transportation. We operate Cascades Transit and the Cascades Ride Center. Employment and Training Services, where we're a partner with the Worksource Centers throughout the region. That's a photo of our office here in Lapine. We share with the Department of Human Services. We're up off Bluewood or on Bluewood Avenue. And then we have a small community and economic development team, and we provide business loans as well, public lending resources. In terms of transportation, I'm going to go through this quick. Slow me down if there are areas you want to talk out. And I want to preface this by, again, maybe going back to the mission statement. Again, I think we really went through a process to reconfirm our commitment to cities and counties and our partnerships and working in support. And a lot of the actual strategies and goals woven throughout our strategic plan really come back to that concept. And one of those is to look at and work on our partnerships with cities when it comes to things like transit. We've developed CET over the years. It's still a relatively new regional scale transit system, but it kind of grew organically, and we're kind of at a point where we're moving maybe from that startup mode to a more stable long-term system. And I think we recognize that to really be successful, we want to have a dialogue in each community about the services we provide. Does it make sense for the community? I mean, now we've got decades worth of data we can pull together and look at ridership numbers and all that sort of stuff. Look at the budget. Does this make sense? Is this something that's supported? Look at the long-term goals. I mean, where do we want to go with this? And similar to the kind of conversation with ODOT, there's always funding constraints, and so the idea is to make the best decisions with the funding available. And in the past, we haven't always done a good job of really checking in with cities and even counties to discuss, here's what we do, here's who's riding, here's the benefits we think are realized through the system, but how does the community feel? And I think for us really to continue to develop the system over time, we really need to focus and have those discussions. Today I don't have a proposal on how we do that, but that's on our strategic plan, to work at these community level conversations and partnerships. And ideally, in my opinion, I'd like to see where we agree, you know, here are the services, here's how we sustain over time, and that it's mutually supported. And when I say mutually supported, I'm not talking about funding or anything. It's just the level of service, how we maintain it, and what makes sense. So again, we may come back with some more information. I'd really like at some point also to hear from you on how you would like to have that discussion. I mean, what makes sense to you? Is this something you do feel like council wants to weigh in on in terms of specific service, hours, so forth? And if so, how do we have that conversation? And the last thing I want to do is dump too much detail on you, but it would be, I think, a productive conversation. So in terms of what we're doing, we provide local dial-a-ride service, and that's available in Lapine, and it's by appointment. Folks can call in and schedule a ride for the next day to any location within the Pines got a little bit of a quirky service area because we didn't, most cities we just limited to the urban growth boundary, but La Pine we've extended it, or we have a little bit of a different service area just because of the geography of the town. So I didn't bring a map, but generally it's service within the community. It's open to the general public. It's mainly utilized by seniors and those that don't have other transportation options, but it is open to the public.
Andrew, I'd just like to point out, it's good at this point in time to understand that this Dollar Ride program is actually a federal leveraged program, in that by getting participation from the cities and the counties, you can leverage that money to get a better level of service, so it's specific federal program, and in this area it works from for the county, represented by the county and by the city. So I think this year we put in $1,500, and then the county puts in their piece, and that leverages X amount of money from the federal government to support the Dollar Ride system down here and around La Pine. So it's a special program, and it's important not to confuse it with the rest of CET.
Very good. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I don't have a lot of budget detail or any really in this presentation, but I'd be happy to dig deeper. And that's part of this. We don't want that to be a mystery or a black box or anything. And I think you're right there that, you know, any funding provided in the La Pine community stays in La Pine. We've realized the benefit of a regional system. It's integrated. We have community connectors. We have kind of smaller communities linking into an urban system in Bend. But you know, each of those, I mean, we take pains to very discreetly kind of track our funding and make sure that, and we have to, we're audited mercilessly by the Fed, so we have to really track that. We also provide community connector shuttles between communities. We have a La Pine to Bend route that has 3 round trips a day, Monday through Friday. And it's timed at the Bend fixed route pulse, meaning that those come into Hawthorne Station, they're timed where people don't have to sit around and wait long to get on a bus if they have a destination within the city of Bend. We just recently did an expansion to the Bend system and shortened the headway so the buses are more frequent. And there's a lot of benefit to the rural system by having an easier to navigate Bend system if that's the ultimate destination. Yeah. If folks are going on Redmond or other areas beyond Bend, that's where the interconnection takes place at Hawthorne Station as well. I'll just note, we do some seasonal recreational transit services in partnership with Mount Bachelor and U.S. Forest Service. We operated the shuttle on Lava Butte this summer. This was the first year that Lava Butte did not allow vehicles to drive to the top. I don't know if any of you visited over the summer, but that's prohibited now. So we're operating a shuttle because we were really concerned that there would be a lot of public pushback, but it was very popular and people liked it. They didn't have to wait as long. It was easier to get up and down. So we are providing those, and I'll also note the funding sensitivity issue. Those are all entirely self-supported by fares and the partners, in this case the Forest Service and the fares cover 100% of that cost. And the Lehigh contribution, even federal funding, goes to that because it's kind of an add-on. But it's a nice service to the community and to those partners. We operate the Cascades East Ride Center, which is a medical ride brokerage. Folks that are Medicaid eligible and need a ride to an appointment, a medical appointment, either in town or in Central Oregon or even to Portland or, you know, a specialized clinic. Rather than paying for those trips on their own, they have to call in and get brokered to the lowest cost qualified medical provider. So it's a way of the Medicaid system to control costs by making sure rides are provided in an affordable way. And finally, we operate a volunteer ride program. When all else fails, we have volunteers that are able to transport people, mainly to medical appointments. And again, mainly these are populations that don't have other options. Here's a map of the community connector system. I suspect most of you are somewhat familiar with the concepts here, but we operate routes between the cities of Central Oregon. All are connected, and we took on the Warm Springs Transit and that intercommunity route to Madras about a year ago we took that on. Here's the Lapine bed schedule. You can find this online. I won't go into great detail, but you can see there are leaving Lapine two routes in the morning, and then one leaving Lapine in the afternoon, and conversely leaving Bend, and so basically three round trips throughout the day. We are, when I talk about the 2016 agenda in just a minute or two, we'll note that we are going to be working on an expansion of the community connector system over the next few months, expanding service and adding potentially some routes. We've heard really from the community and those we've talked to, midday routes would be of value. See, these are morning and late afternoon, and if somebody comes to Bend in the morning, they're stuck there until the afternoon. And so that would likely be one of the changes, is adding a fourth round trip, I should say, midday. Ridership numbers, just some very high level numbers for Lapine. I know in a vacuum these probably don't mean a whole lot, but basically I really want to more call out the trends that we're seeing. The top grid there is for the community connector ridership going back to 2010. You'll see the peak of it was around 2012, 2013. That's really consistent across the entire region, and that corresponds to a period where we actually had to cut back services due to some funding reductions. So you'll see if I expanded this out, you'd see some ridership increases, and then we had to cut back, and that's kind of resulted in a bump down in ridership. But we're still averaging this year about 700 rides a month through the end of September. I think you'll see it's down a little bit from 2014, which is unique to Lapine. I looked at other communities, and most are showing a little bit of an upward trend. Really, that community connector system as a whole is where we're seeing the growth on the transit ridership, growth in demand. And this is actually the first year we're projecting, 2015, where the community connector ridership is going to be higher than the local community dial-a-ride numbers across the system. But you'll see in Lapine, that's not the case. We're projecting we are projecting it, but the trend is a little different, where in the local dial-a-ride we're seeing a bit of an increase in ridership and a bit of a decrease in the community connector. So I'm not sure why that is. Sometimes these really small trends are hard to figure out. The community connector is where we're seeing the growth. And I think that number actually on the community connector ridership, when we're done with 2015, I think it'll be along the lines of 2014, because we tend to see ridership drop during the summer and then build back up in the fall. September, October, November are our busiest ridership months. It's the start of the school year, and we have a lot of people that are going to school that ride inter-community routes, so I think that'll bump back up. So just some basic information for you there. And again, stop me if you have questions.
With CMCC, will you see any changes, do you think, in the outlying areas like Lapine? Do you think there's going to be usage for it? I'm hoping that will increase, but...
You mean going to OSU?
Yeah.
Well, the last time we did a rider survey was 2012. Mm-hmm. We often don't know exactly who's riding and for what purpose. We're going to be doing another survey in the spring, actually. But the last one we did was a couple years ago, and we found that a really high percentage were going to school, particularly in that inner community route.
Okay.
80% between school and work. I mean, that's really why people ride, and more so for school than work. So we know that that's kind of a core user of the entire community connector system. We also know that OSU set very aggressive goals in terms of having non-car transportation to their campus. They have very limited parking. That was part of the deal where they located, was to try to really enhance other modes. And they've been a great partner in expanding our transit system. They've actually invested in the Bend route expansion to help kind of increase the number of routes and the frequency of buses to go to that side of town. And so that was a very good success. So they're certainly anticipating it. I'm not sure if we can really drill down deeply enough in the data yet to see, and their enrollment's hasn't grown that much yet. But over time, the answer, I guess, is yes. That's what we anticipate, and that's part of this expansion, is really, looking at the trends that we see coming around ridership. I mean, I think the inner community will continue to be the growth on the transit system as commute rates increase, as housing pressures make people have to live maybe farther from where they work. I think we see a lot of these trends that are suggesting that transportation is a kind of a key solution in some of those kind of growth pressures we're going to be seeing. So along those lines, you know, it's been our approach to really look for partnerships. You know, how do we expand service by working with those organizations, entities, businesses that are ultimately going to benefit from a really vibrant transit system? You know, I mentioned OSU, but certainly COCC and St. Charles were the other kind of key partners in our expansion event. They basically saw the value of better transit to meet their needs. St. Charles has tremendous parking pressures, and they really are under pressure to ensure that their patients are arriving to their appointments. They're not missing appointments, and often they find that transportation is a barrier to that. So they really came to the table and partnered to make sure that they had sufficient transportation to their medical campus in Bend. But it doesn't just stop in Bend. They also understand there's a regional healthcare system, and they have locations throughout the region. So we're going to continue to work with those sorts of partners to see how we continue to grow the system to be a wide variety of needs. So I think we'll be evolving over time.
Andrew, how will you quantify the idea that we'll have individuals riding the connector to get to OSU? How will you? I mean, and I asked the question only because if you're going to survey in spring, that really represents 4 years since you've done a survey, and that seems an awful long period of time. I mean, we know so much has happened since 12,
exactly,
and with the growth of the economy and stuff like that. So,
well, I'll tell you what our plan is in the short term and then the long term. You know, I mentioned we have partnerships with OSU and COCC and St. Charles. Well, part of those partnerships are group pass programs. So at St. Charles, all of their employees have access to CET through a group pass program, so they don't have to pay a fare, they can ride, at least on the Bend system. And same with OSU Cascades, their faculty and students have group pass programs. So all of those organizations, we have other group pass programs with the Bend Downtowners, Visit Bend, and COCC. That's the extent right now. But all of those have an interest in knowing how it's utilized. So we are going to be doing those surveys much more frequently. We've talked about, do we want to do it twice a year, or is once a year sufficient, because there's cost and time around doing this. But once or twice a year, certainly we're going to be collecting that information. That's really the only way we have right now to really distinguish who's riding and for what purpose, how many different people, those sorts of things. You know, we track rides, but it really doesn't, it's not a very rich source of data in terms of who's writing it for what purpose.
I think it's a selling point to the councils to understand, you know, because we represent such a different cut of pie down here, with the county being the overwhelming population in relation to the city. So understanding what those differences are would be important to the council.
Agreed.
Yeah.
All those partners would say the same thing.
Yeah, especially as we move forward toward a stabilizing funding and,
right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah, the second part of that is longer term, you could invest in certain equipment that better tracks people as they come on.
Right.
So if you have a group pass, you have a card that is barcoded to that specific usage, like OSU student, COCC student, but we're not quite there in terms of our investment in the expensive infrastructure that would be support that. But that's down the road. We're going to have to do that.
Right.
So, want to shift to another program area, unless there were questions about the CET? Okay. We also operate, as mentioned, employment and training programs. We're partnered at the WorkSource Centers throughout Central Oregon, including an office here in La Pine, in partnership with the Department of Human Services. The purposes behind that are really simply to prepare job seekers for employment and more broadly, prepare a workforce for businesses. And we partner very closely with the Oregon Employment Department and its services. But what we do on the kind of the adult side, funding and these programs are split between adult and youth. On the adult side, we work with basic job search assistance. We have training resources for those who need to be trained to go back to work. So basically, you know, providing linkages to job openings, and if the folks aren't employable in the short term, we look at getting the skills necessary to become employed. We're also a contractor with Department of Human Services, so we do a number of welfare to work type programs. lot of those come with job search requirements or other requirements, so we manage those. And then we operate a youth alternative high school work education program that's around credit recovery, GED prep, GED testing, and then we provide work experience and job skills as well.
How often are the is this office open down here? Is it 5 days a week?
Yeah, it's open 5 days a week, but split between those three kind of program areas. On the federal side for the Workforce Investment Act funding, right now we're not operating out of line because of funding cutbacks. So we have a staff person, and you know, they're there in the office 4 days a week doing the welfare to work program.
Okay.
For the time being, we're unable to, you know, due to budget cutbacks, we're unable to have that staff person out for the fifth day to do the worker retraining stuff. So that has to be handled in the short term through our Bend office. I can go into much more detail. There's a pretty significant restructure in that system, and we're losing some ability to kind of make those decisions. A new board is forming and making the strategic decisions about how those resources are allocated. But the office itself is open 5 days a week.
Okay.
Our program, our youth program, is there 5 days a week for the students. So the alternative high school program is really a strong partnership with the Bend Lapine School District. Lapine High School students are referred to the alternative program if, you know, for a variety of reasons. They're just maybe not succeeding in the traditional setting of the high school. And we do credit recovery, GED. We do a lot of assessments, those sorts of things, to find out what kind of program is necessary for the student to become successful. Again, we also provide job skills. A lot of that's in the forest type of work. And really, the idea is that we are trying to provide kind of the soft skills, you know, so that students that we work with have more exposure to showing up to work, learning how to be punctual, how to show them initiative, leadership, those sorts of things. So often these are short term, either a season, a summer program, those sorts of things. In terms of outcomes from the last school year, we had a total of 46 students referred from the high school. We accomplished just under 50 credits among those students, high school credits. 11 students achieved their GEDs. Two received diplomas through Lapine High School. Three students participated in work experience at private sites. So we operate youth groups that work with students, but we also work directly with businesses and can place students in places of business. And then 11 participated through the summer work experience program. That was workforce. So, any questions?
Well, yeah, I was dreaming, you know, I wish we had some kind of a center up here where even the older generation that are still looking for jobs could be retrained in carpentry or something. They don't all have to have master's degrees, just getting them in the workforce, but then the potential for being hired is so tight right now. But I think there's definitely a need up here for some training or retraining, and even of the kids as they do get out. When you work with some of the kids, they're so used to Lapine, and they begin to look at that broader scope, and it's pretty frightening. And you hate to see them give up, and even the older folks, it's just overwhelming right now for some of them.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is businesses are hiring, so you know, folks that are job ready are going to find work. And really, a lot of the folks that we see now coming, the WorkSource centers are those that have pretty significant barriers.
Mm-hmm.
Training is like often not the top barrier. There are other issues, drug and alcohol dependency, or you know, any number of issues, criminal background. And some are just faced with some really kind of logistical barriers, you know, the distance to employment, housing costs, those sorts of things, these interrelated barriers.
Everything.
So, you know, I've had a few conversations with Chad.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly around the interest of ensuring that there are business support opportunities on the workforce side, you know, making sure that you know, there's access to, you know, classes or trainings, those sorts of things, professional development opportunities for job seekers, resume classes, mm-hmm. those sorts of things as well. So understand that there's some momentum, and that certainly, I understand, was reflected in the forum ad a couple weeks ago, but that was one of the priorities. And so, you know, we're interested in figuring out how we can better kind of, I guess, understand the community's needs and figure out how we can better kind of partner on that. Our challenge is that a new workforce board is forming, and they're the ones that are going to be doing the strategic plan. We're a contractor. So a lot of these discussions will need to take place kind of with the new workforce board. And they're going to have some decisions to be made about how they apply resources. Again, parallels to maybe these ODOT conversations where there's a lot of need around the region. How do we ensure what's provided within the community is of the highest value and will result in the highest return, knowing that we're just in an environment of constrained resources. And the same dynamics are going on with workforce, where the federal investment's decreasing. So we have to be more and more targeted about how we allocate those resources. And the trade-off always is, do you kind of centralize in the bigger communities and maybe do more? Or do you have more physical locations throughout more kind of rural areas of the region? Those are trade-offs. There's cost to having staff and paying for physical locations, and there's cost savings to centralize. And so I know this new board is going to be kind of grappling with those sorts of questions.
You know, it's funny, there's our EDCO person sitting there. If we had Roger Lee from EDCO sitting here, he would say the barrier to bringing new employment or new business to Central Oregon is a workforce. You sit here and say, we have all these people that don't have jobs. And I think you did say it, that they have lots of issues. That doesn't mean all of them, right. But a whole bunch of them have issues. Mm-hmm. And so on one hand, we do need workers so that companies, they don't want to come to some degrees because they can't get a workforce. And I won't go into my thoughts on why we have 25% of these people that are unemployed. You know, as I always say to different people, depending on where I am, you know, life is choices. And when I choose to tattoo my face, there are consequences to it. And you can tattoo your face, but there is a consequence to it. And I can pierce my face, and I can do both in some cases. And, you know, and that's, so, you know, you say, well, these people need help. The fact is, businesses are looking for they don't have to be all that skilled. You go out here to these construction sites and they need people to help them haul lumber, pick up, but you do have to show up at 7 a.m. Mm-hmm. You might have to pass a basic drug test, and you might have to have a driver's license.
And even those are negotiable.
Well, marijuana, they probably will even let you buy on.
Yeah.
You know, it's... Yeah. It is kind of a catch-22.
You're absolutely right.
And that's a tough crowd you're dealing with.
Exactly. MX. Particularly again now. And it's funny how quickly that dynamic flips. When the economy was down, it was just lines out the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you were hiring. And it just, you know, there was maybe a day when it was perfectly balanced and then it flipped. So, you know, that's why I talk about the youth programs. I think that's the real value in the workforce development system. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's only so much we could do about the tattooed face team. Job seekers, there's just limited opportunities and they have a lot of barriers. It's these youth programs, I think, are the promise where we can do a better job of instilling those values, the basic soft skills and work experience, and that's going to make the difference. Mm-hmm. And that population, that, you know, I guess maybe 18 to 25 cohort is still very underemployed compared to other groups. And they're just a kind of a population that, at least the ones we're working with, that just don't have much work experience and don't have basic skills, and often they don't have family support to make it work. And so, you know, if I had my kind of druthers and could kind of direct the workforce system, I would really be looking to maximize resources in that age group. That's where the difference is going to be made.
Well, and the other problem is a lot of people don't know you exist.
Oh,
or else you have probably twice the age.
Yeah, you know, and on the youth, part of that's calculated. I mean, a lot of this is really strong partnerships with the school districts, and we get referrals from them, and that's kind of how we work with them. And we don't always want to kind of trumpet our numbers because it's part of the school district's overall performance. So, you know, we have a tough enough time serving those that are referred from the school districts.
But a lot of them dropped out, so they're not in the school system. And they don't know you exist.
There is a group that has dropped, absolutely. Yeah, and they're underserved, you're right.
I think too, we face the issue about, you know, there's this great goal of X number of people entering college, you know. And Kathy hit on it a while ago about, you know, the other skills, the craft skills that are out there, that you know, carpentry and welding and some of these others, where they learn at least a basic skill, how to hold a ranch and do some of these things, that's no longer focused on at all. I mean, they give them books and they teach them ideas and all of that, and you know, you've got these personalities that, hey, I don't like math, I don't like this. And we see right here in La Pine, we've got such a high or low graduation rate based upon student body. And I think that's an impediment to you know, you give somebody some tools to work with and do something with their hands, and they don't have to figure out how to do some of the, you know, do the math, or all of that's important. But I just think that
great. That's again what we're hearing for businesses.
They and the side effect to that is down the road they don't know how to come to work. You know, they don't know that, you know, it's not important to them, you know, to understand that there are consequences, there's to choices, and
I guess I've been really lucky. For the last 3 years, I've been involved with the La Pine High School. I'm the office manager at the La Pine Senior Center. And we've had two students working with our kitchen staff for 3 years, learning how to make themselves available to go out and work. Neither one of those students have missed a day. When mom wants to go on vacation, those kids have a fit. So it's been a really good program for us. Mm-hmm. It's worked really well, and the kids have worked in with us great.
Well, that's good.
It's a good.
Yeah. And I think, you know, what we want to look at is opportunities to expand those work experience placements.
And at first, I was very dubious. I didn't know how it was going to work.
Yeah.
And I said, well, let's take a chance.
Good. Well, good for you. It is kind of a chance. Often they're not successful, but it's kind of part of the deal. And you know, again, I think just a lot of these students need to be exposed to those sorts of work sites. They're mm-hmm. just, you know, it's a different environment out there. I think it's harder for youth to work. You know, there's
absolutely
the farm work that we had, and the skills and those sorts of things.
Yeah.
There's more limitations on what youth can do in the workplace. And so,
well, $15 minimum wage isn't going to help either.
It's not going to help either.
No.
Absolutely. I mean,
So moving on, just a quick note, we operate business lending programs as well. These are a variety of different funding programs from EBA, USDA, a lot of details and acronyms. But the upshot is these are loan programs that are publicly funded, but they're for projects that maybe aren't bankable without a little bit of public lending. We often partner with banks to get them done. We do a wide variety of different types of projects, real estate, working capital, any number of things. So just mentioning that to you. And finally, we have a community and economic development department. And you know, obviously, our primary economic development partner in Central Oregon is EDCO, Janet and her crew, which do a great job on the business recruitment, retention, and working with businesses to grow over time, to keep folks in the region, and to work with communities to make sure that we have business-friendly approaches. And so, you know, that's not the kind of economic development that CYC is involved in. Ours is more and overly simplified. Often we focus on the public side, supporting communities. Got a long kind of track record in trying to match communities with grant opportunities, manage grants, those sorts of things. Infrastructure. We do a lot in the natural resource realm, supporting some forest collaborative projects in Deschutes and Ocracoke National Forests, and also in the biomass utilization field, where we're looking for opportunities to develop biomass as kind of an energy or a thermal heat source throughout the region. So We've got some areas of niche that we work in on the community and economic development side. We're also working on a comprehensive economic development strategy for the region. Both Janet and Corey attended a Deschutes County meeting yesterday where we worked on some priority setting in terms of, at a regional level, what are the priorities that we need to work on? Where does collaboration make sense as we address some of our economic development issues? And particularly kind of focused on the public side and these big issues like housing and transportation and workforce development, where we need to kind of focus efforts and be more strategic. So those are kind of the areas where we function. The last thing I wanted to hit on was more or less, again, kind of a reaffirmation of our role as a council of governments formed by cities and counties. And we really, again, provide services on behalf of local jurisdictions, as well as state and federal agencies. And we're really around finding efficiencies and looking for opportunities for collaboration over time. So in terms of economies of scale, I said I'd give a couple of examples. And one of the things we're going to be talking about over the 2016 on our agenda is to look for opportunities for exploring the development of shared services between communities, opportunities where communities could work together and not replicate and have to do the same thing in every community. And the best example of that is there's already agreement among some cities and counties, we have nothing to do with this, but around sharing public works equipment and those sorts of things. So not every community needs to purchase every piece of equipment. So there's some agreements between some jurisdictions for sharing that, and so there's cost savings, what have you. We really see CYC as a potential venue to explore those, and we're going to be working to get a staff level, a city and county administrator meeting on the schedule for early 2016 to kind of explore those opportunities. An example maybe that we haven't really fully vetted yet would be sharing planning capacity. So a lot of communities struggle to pay for full-time planning staff, and often it becomes contracted out at a higher rate, maybe to a private contractor. So are there opportunities for communities to work together and maybe pay for a shared staff person that's housed at the regional level, either at COIC or somewhere in the region, and communities just pay for a portion of that person. And they become kind of an employee directly affiliated with the local governments, but it's not something that each community would have to pay for and sustain on their own. So again, looking for cost savings and efficiencies, and there's other examples of that from around the nation where communities work together around efficiencies. And again, the idea of also creating collaborative opportunities or understanding collaborative opportunities where cities and counties can work together. And there are, again, many examples of that. Some very good ones include the Area Commission on Transportation COACT, which is a city and county primarily, and ODOT, and the tribes come together to review transportation priorities to communicate and get on the same page in terms of articulating priorities to the state. And also just to share information and communicate, collaborate, those sorts of things. So any number of those opportunities may make sense to pursue. And really what I, this comprehensive economic development strategy meeting yesterday, a couple of the takeaways I took from that meeting was a lot of energy around this housing issue. And housing has become obviously a big issue, affordability issues and supply issues, rental vacancy rates, what have you. There's no easy fix. Every community is dealing with this. And we know each community is dealing individually within their city, looking at tools and looking at incentives and looking at policy. And we know there's work at the state level, but the question is there work that could happen at the regional level? Either sharing information, sharing best practices, looking at the wide range of strategies that have been implemented and maybe looking at ones that work best. What has worked in Bend that maybe could be applicable in other communities? What's Madras doing that maybe could be shared? And also, anytime you bring kind of a regional discussion together, you also provide the opportunity for advocacy or shared priorities being articulated to state agencies, to the legislature, those sorts of things. When the region works together, single voice, you're going to have more kind of political influence over resources. On the housing side, perhaps it's how does the region work together to pursue some of these incentive programs at the state level rather than competing, each community getting in line, trying to get some precious few resources. How do we work together to make sure that we're collaborating on accessing resources? So those are the sorts of things we're going to be exploring kind of over time. And will be probably an offshoot of our city county administrator meetings and the comprehensive economic development strategy. I can really see those as opportunities and processes that might identify those sorts of opportunities. The pictures there, there are a couple of examples, particularly on the right, the regional large lot program is maybe an example of where the region came together and really came up with an innovative way of identifying more large industrial lands for economic development projects around the region. Oregon's land use process makes that a challenge, and so, you know, working collaboratively, the region came up with kind of a made in Central Oregon solution to that.
And isn't EDCO already doing that?
The regional large lot program. They're certainly a partner and active in it, but it was really that the program came about by local governments and EDCO identifying a need, having this barrier. COIC became involved when there was a need to have kind of an umbrella organization to kind of pull it together, make sure all the cities and counties were in agreement, that we had the formal agreements in place, and that our board serves as more or less the clearinghouse for identifying and kind of endorsing or approving sites as regional. And the cities and counties still need to go through a land use process to bring those properties into the UGBs. But yeah, I mean, EDCO really was the entity that identified the need, the problem that needed to be solved. And the region more or less partnered on finding a unique solution to that. So I want to close by just again kind of reaffirming our agenda for 2016. On the regional collaboration, efficiencies, and priorities, we're going to again be working with cities, counties in some sort of form to look at opportunities for more efficiencies. We're going to continue to work on this comprehensive economic development strategy to identify regional priorities where collaboration makes sense. We're going to be doing some work on a coordinated human services transportation plan. I won't go into that. That's kind of a mandated planning process, but the idea behind it is to identify priorities for transportation, either improvements or if there are gaps in transportation, really in support of human service populations, elderly, those with disabilities, those sorts. And again, by coming up with priorities, we're going to have a better shared and collaborative priorities, we're going to have a better opportunity to kind of fill those gaps. The piece I didn't list there was, again, this discussion potentially about how we really, you know, particularly on the CET side, how do we develop these community-level partnerships where we have discussions about service level, service design, and make sure that kind of the way we're going is in a way that's supported by the community. So we'll be looking for those opportunities in 2016, too. On the CET side, I'm going to maybe come back to that dedicated funding real quick, but we're going to be working on our Community Connector expansion. So we're going to be adding hours to the Community Connector system. We have kind of our operational funding package together, and we're securing some grant resources for the infrastructure. Incidentally, we're going to be applying for ODOT kind of STIP enhanced funding to construct some bus shelters on the Community Connector system and adding new stops. Currently, for the most part, the system works where we have a stop in each community and they hub in Redmond at the kind of the Redmond hub or for the Lapine route at the Bend Hawthorne station. And we're really exploring opportunities to add stops to the system so it's more functional. A good example would be if folks are traveling from Lapine to Bend, often a destination is Walmart. And for now, as it stands now, folks will have to kind of ride to Hawthorne station and make a transfer and get onto a local bus and head back down south to go to Walmart and go back to Bend and then back to Hawthorne Station and then drive by Walmart again heading back home. So we want to look for opportunities for those high, you know, kind of the high usage destinations to add stops, and Walmart is one we're looking at. We're also looking at here in Lapine having a stop closer into kind of downtown area. Right now we hub at the Wikia Junction parking lot. So we're looking at adding a stop in the First and Huntington area, kind of where the medical clinic is, where their workforce center is, and the school, and obviously other businesses in that area. So that was deemed, in part through conversations with staff here, a good location for a potential stop. So That STIP process, it's a couple years out until that funding would become available, but that will be part of our application. Communications and branding, I think every strategic plan results in those sorts of things. So we'll be working on that, of course, and then continuing our service delivery in the roles we're currently in. I mentioned in my introduction that I was going to mention this kind of legislative concept, and I know I've probably gone over time. So again, I'll just mention at a high level what we're working on. And again, at some point in the future, I'll likely come back and give you more information and ultimately ask for an endorsement. We're gearing up for the 2017 session. And really, the idea is that we're going to be looking for authorization for COIC as the transit provider to directly go to voters if we want to pursue dedicated funding in one or more communities. Right now, we're not a type of organization that can directly go to voters for that sort of thing. So we're looking for that authorization. And really, the challenge here is, maybe the easiest way that I found to describe this is that what we're really seeking to do is maintain the current structure of CPT, regional scale, and also provide communities access to more tools for long-term transit funding. We know the real value of CET over the years is that it was developed as a regional system, that we have all the communities connected with community connector shuttles. We have an urban system in Bend that works very well and has recently expanded. We've got local service in every community. We're connected to the tribes. We have a single kind of governance and overhead structure, and it's managed by the cities and counties. Our board is composed of cities and counties. So we see the value of protecting the current system, and particularly this region scale concept, which has resulted in a lot of the success, or led to a lot of the success we have. Our challenge is, we also know that at least one community in Central Oregon, we're gonna be pursuing a dedicated, stable funding source for, and that's Bend. Right now, you know, the city is committed to three years of funding out of their general fund to provide that local match to leverage federal and really pay for the system. And you know, it's a valuable service they want to maintain, but they also have a lot of pressures on their general fund, as I'm sure you all can relate to. And so they want us to be working on long-term dedicated funding. As it stands now, we have two tools that we could use to pursue that, and some variations on those tools. But basically, we could do two things. One, we could propose a Bend Transit District or Transportation District, and they could set their own rate, subject to voter approval, and kind of have an urban system. But as a result, we would break apart CET. We'd have an urban system that had its own kind of governance entity, its own government organization managing it, and we'd have the balance of the region. And frankly, I don't think that's a good solution for the areas outside of that. So that is not something that I'm in support of, and our board, frankly, hasn't been real supportive of that. The other option would be to do a region-wide district, where we do one vote across the entire region, we have one rate across the entire region, and it's basically the metro or TriMet model. And we know that's not going to work for Central Oregon. I don't think Lapine wants to be pulled into a kind of a Bend-focused transit vote, and we don't have any interest in that either. So we've got some tough decisions with how we sustain CET while recognizing that certain parts of the region are going to be eventually needing to establish a more dedicated and stable funding source. Bend particularly, but potentially Redmond or others down the road. We propose kind of a concept that empowers, if the legislature would approve it, would change state statute to allow COIC as an intergovernmental organization formed by cities and counties to directly go to voters for, again, one or more communities, and looking for that authorization. The concept behind it would include cities basically opting into this approach. So we wouldn't do it on behalf of Lapine, if Lapine ever got to that point, which I'm not advocating for. But if there was interest in establishing this local dedicated funding source, the city could opt into this, and we could do some sort of look at dedicated funding for other communities. So that's the idea behind it, again, at a very high level. There's a lot of detail we have to work out. We don't have the answers to yet, which is why I'm not asking you for anything today. But this is a concept that we feel is important for the future of CET, where we provide local communities the tools to fund the system at their desired rate of service. Would also maintain the status quo, cities and counties controlling the transit system through their participation in COIC, and also retaining this regional system. So I'll stop there, but I will come back in the future with some more detail.
All right. Council, any further questions or any comments?
Thank you for the time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Andrew, for coming along. We appreciate it. And I think, you know, coming back when we get the framework around the idea of stability, stable funding across the region by area, cities, that kind of thing, that'll be an important aspect for us. Okay?
Yeah, I think that what they're trying to do is to, council of governments can do a lot of things, and because of how we've been funded, it's been hard, because they basically can only do where they have to follow the money, because they don't have any. But you talked, they had sent me an email about like planning services and some of those things, and these smaller cities all struggle with a higher level of expertise. We know that firsthand here.
Right.
And Andrew and his folks had said, you know, would you think that is a possible need? And I said, yeah, it is. These Culver's, Metolius's, and La Pines, you know, if they had a full-time planner that then they maybe worked a day or two a week in La Pine and a day in Culver and a half a day in Metolius and a half a day in Maupin or something, or, you know, whatever. And any more you can email, and you don't have to physically be in all those places. And that, I said, you know, that is a service. And then we would pay our share. And you could do that with finance. You could do it with all kinds of things. Council of Governments really can be whatever we want it to be. In Central Oregon, they've done the economic development piece and did job training until CET came along. And so what they're talking about is, you know, I think there is a whole lot to it.
Right.
And getting this, because for a lot of reasons. But, I think it's on the right track. And I look forward to meeting when we all get together, the city managers, sometime in the next month or two. When are we doing that?
I think we're targeting February.
Yeah. You know, CYC is an organization that nobody knows what it does. And it's, you know, I was on the board, I chaired it years ago. Nobody knows what it does. They don't even know what it stands for. CYC, you know, they can't. But that is true of these kinds of organizations, because 75% of the people may not use any of their services. But even if they do, they don't know it.
Right.
So it's a darn, it's a tough deal.
But you're, I mean, you know, again, our new strategic plan, our new mission statement is really kind of emphasizing these council of government type roles. And I think that's the direction that we see the highest value, again, particularly for cities and counties. So we're really eager to continue to explore these sorts of things and make sure we're adding value back to local communities.
Grant writing, they will do.
Yeah.
And help with some of those things. We were just talking today about one, you know, that we can, and for a fee, I mean, they, because they have to pay their wages down there, but sometimes it's free, but sometimes it's not. We can go to them and hire them to do something. So that, they're a service where you each don't have to have your own, and I think it's great.
And I actually had it written down here to bring up, just the grant writing piece.
Yeah.
I know they do it, and we always struggle with the whole idea of something jumps in front of us that's opportune, but you know, we have a limited staff time and everything, so. But
well, I know,
yeah, it's a service that's,
yeah,
that can be there.
At least one other jurisdiction brought that up to me recently too. So these are the sorts of things that, you know, these are common, and we need to find out how to address that.
So could the rec center use that? We were talking
Park
about
and Rec.
Park and Rec.
Can a council of governments work with? You probably could. I mean, you could work with other entities.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it helps fund
the
staff.
Yep.
Well,
many partners.
Yeah, we have many partners. You know, I mean, that are agent organizations outside. You know, and
well, that would be a
and
great
it's
avenue.
There's schools. There's all kinds of programs that COIC partners with. There's no reason they couldn't, because it is a sort of a pay as you go.
Mm-hmm.
And
these are the sort of discussions that it makes sense to have as a group, because mm-hmm. you know, there's a balance here in terms of identifying the need and then making sure we've got the kind of capacity to meet it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't have a dedicated grant writer on site today,
right.
But if we knew it was supported, but there would be enough kind of interest around the region, then we could make sure we had that staff person on board. Right now, it can be a struggle. You need a grant writer. Well, you can probably find a staff to make it happen, but. We don't want to build up too much expectation that's available today.
Right.
The potential is there that we can be kind of the home.
Well, I think that fits back to the whole idea of having a program where somebody gets hired that represents several cities as a collaboration to use that person.
But see, the problem is without some sort of funding, they can't afford to hire it, because you have to have them hired before people start using it.
Right.
So we go down and pay them $1,000 to do a grant, well, they can't hire full-time. You know, it maybe at first has to be they contract to some people to do it. But,
yeah, or you secure a grant to kind of get you going. Started. And, you know.
And getting this ability to ultimately let people vote on taxation, that's the heavy lift, and they're well aware of that. And to form a regional group, even if they come to Lapine and the outlying cities especially and say, well, we're not actually going to ask you to vote on one, there'll be a whole bunch of people will say, yeah, today. And so that's going to be interesting. But I think your concept of breaking it to where Bend, we do it as a region, but then Bend could put one up for them, or maybe it's some other boundary. Maybe it's the Bend-Lapine School District, but it's some boundary. You know, whatever, same with Redmond. And I think that's, yeah.
It has to go, yeah.
Yeah, so it will be interesting.
And I don't think, you know, even though something was written up in the paper a long time ago, but like Terry from the corner store, he knows very well what COIC is because you helped him, you know. But a lot of people don't know that.
I think it's while it can be public record,
mm-hmm.
You know, I was there,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think it's something I wanted to tell everybody in town about.
Yeah.
But we have another one. We have another one right in this local area that was a big purchase.
Yeah.
And it comes to a point where